From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll hear from people who support pregnant people of color in the Milwaukee area and learn why that support is so necessary. Then we'll hear from some of the Milwaukeeans honored with Milwaukee Magazine's Unity Awards.
Unity Awards and anything that we can do to remind each other that number one, we are all in this together and we are going to continue to have each other's backs.
We'll explore what sitting all day does to our bodies and how to prevent the negative effects.
Sitting in itself is not bad. You know, we sit to have dinner, we sit to socialize with our friends, we sit to read, and those are all great activities. But it's when we sit for too long that it becomes detrimental to our health.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us today. Black and brown moms and birthing people in Milwaukee have some of the worst birthing outcomes in the nation. Even being pregnant can come with danger. But there are an abundance of birth workers that cater their services directly to these demographics. And many of these people and resources gathered this past weekend at the Black Birth Collection. WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez spoke with a few of them and asked how they support those who are expecting.
I want to start off with a confession. I'm a man, and that's not the confession, but I can't birth a child. And it's always been kind of a dream. Not like it's on my bucket list, but sometimes I imagine what it must be like. The way birthing bodies change, how hard I would lean into being dramatic and needy, and the cravings. Now, let's imagine you're a person of color and pregnant in Milwaukee, home to some of the highest Black preterm birth rates in the country, 3 times the infant mortality rate of white families. I mean, our own health department calls racism a public health crisis. You might rightfully be freaking out, feeling unsupported. So we're going to start out with something you can do even before birth, getting a grip on breastfeeding. Paisley Lucas is here to calm your nerves on the topic, even if you have reservations, which she says is normal.
Our parents have been given formula in the hospitals. Our grandparents have been given formulas in the hospital. I mean, we were the babies. We were given formulas in the hospital because there was a huge formula push.
Basically, there's a learning curve to all this. And to counter skepticism, Paisley pushes knowledge. She consults through her business, Mood, and she also teaches free classes through Milwaukee Rec.
A lot of people have a lot of the same concerns. A lot of it is normally about, like, how do I know if I'm making enough milk? What happens when I go back to work? What does pumping look like?
Okay, hypothetical birthing person. You're taking Paisley's class. She shares more prenatal resources, including a big one. One that can provide healthier and safer birthing conditions.
First, congratulations on being pregnant. It's a beautiful journey. I would ask, have you ever heard of what a doula does?
This is Whitney Bingham, doula extraordinaire and owner of Selfish Evolution.
And if you haven't, a doula would be someone that is an educated support person. Now, I know you have support people in your life that can help you out throughout, but having an educated support person can make a huge difference.
Whitney says ideally she connects with expecting people in the first trimester and can stay with them up to 3 months postpartum. A lot of that work is focused around B-Day, including creating a birth plan, which spells out roles for all your family members and support team.
It's usually about a 2-hour visit. And like I said, we'll go over positions, we'll go over their birth plan, any wishes, any last minute questions. We'll go over all different scenarios that could possibly happen and what we want to do. The biggest thing I also tell my clients is if they don't know how to answer a question or a request from staff or don't know what to do or how to, you know, respond, we go over making sure that they ask for space so that they can talk with their team. They want to talk with me as their doula, talk with their family before making a decision.
All right, let's fast forward. You've just celebrated the birth, which is huge news. But the work doesn't end there. Whitney says that post-birth care isn't just for baby. It's just as important for new moms and families. So let's go and take advantage of a mom's group, like Maternally Strong.
We want to specify and be really specific that we've created this group for Black and brown women to, you know, have a space that is safe, that is comfortable, celebrated.
This is Michelle Wilkins. All members of the group are birth workers, including certified Kappa doulas, postpartum Kappa doulas, with training in nutritional health, lactation, and prenatal massage therapy. And while they're all professionally trained, Shauna Franklin says the focus of the mom's group is on warmth.
We have developed a mom friend group, so why shouldn't everybody have that? So we want to be more friends than you feel like you're walking into this stuffy environment where you have to, like, censor yourself.
The vibes are very much thoughtful group therapy session. The women of Maternally Strong lead.
And a lot of the questions that we ask are very intentional.
Like, what are mom's fears, or what does she need help with in this moment?
They're very individualized. They are very purposeful questions where we give them the amount of time to think of an answer, but then also the opportunity to, you know, really pour into what that answer means. So, like, we've had women respond, and their response is not even words, it's tears. And, like, for us, that is a response. That's a huge response that we embrace. We're all women, so most of the time we're all in tears, which is okay. However, we use that moment to, like, embrace that that's your response. That's your answer. That's what we're leading with.
Now, hopefully on your postnatal journey, you're feeling supported. Baby is healthy, and your new life is finding balance. But we know that's not always the case. One of the biggest issues around this time can be postpartum depression, which can affect up to 20% of birthing people.
So, didn't know my body anymore. I didn't know how to move it. I didn't know how to love it. I didn't know how, like, I felt uncomfortable in my actual skin. Like, even where I had my C-section, I couldn't even touch that area. Like, physically could not touch it.
While all C-sections are traumatic, Haley King's was especially so. 36 hours of labor, lost heartbeat, both mom and baby in distress. When she touches her scar, she touches all of that pain. She also had issue with the hospital's care after her pregnancy. King says that they told her she'd be able to walk after 24 hours, so they made her get up and walk. The problem was she had lost so much blood during delivery, they had to rush her back to bed and give her 2 blood transfusions.
I was telling them, like, hey, I feel weird. I don't think I feel right, you know? And so, like, not knowing stuff and then having to learn it in, like, these dramatic ways.
That's why she created Afterbirth, a support group for single moms going through it.
When you arrive, you get a gift box, and in the gift box, there's a journal.
Then you meet the community conversation leader, who will kind of be your counselor and moderator for the day.
She is a Black mama, and she also has a background in therapy. And so she does, like, one, know from experience, but also knows professionally just what postpartum looks like in all of the stages.
King also feeds the moms and provides yoga and stretching exercises. And after the day, King makes sure that they have all they need to move forward, including contacts to Black maternal health care across Milwaukee. These women have been through it themselves. And all of the work they do is to make this process easier for Black and brown birthing people in a city where it can be incredibly difficult.
After we have kids, most of the phone calls we get are, how's the baby? Let me FaceTime the baby. Let me come drop off something for the baby. I think we forget that this person has just carried a whole life and given a whole life and is healing from having something removed from their body.
I know when I had my daughter 8 years ago, I made it a point to make sure I found a woman of color for my midwife and my doula. There's just a different connection and safety that you feel.
Being a Black mom in Milwaukee, I just want to say, ask for help. There's a community here to help, and we want to help. That's why we are here. So it's okay to ask for help. Like, let's help each other, and let's have better birthing outcomes. Like, let's save us.
I also want to let every mom know that you are not alone. This is a hard, wonderful, thankless job that we do every day, 24/7. And it is okay to put you first sometimes. I don't think that gets said enough.
No, it don't. We got you, girl. Come see us and find out what we about.
We gonna cry and turn up. Okay. So it's not just gonna be a lot of crying. We gonna turn up too.
That part.
That was Michelle Wilkins, Shanna Franklin, Whitney Bingham, and Paisley Lucas. They spoke with WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez. This week, Milwaukee Magazine will host its 5th annual Unity Awards. The event will recognize 5 honorees for their achievements in making Milwaukee more equitable and inclusive for all. These honorees include Venus Williams, Mary Joy Hickey, and Damian Bookman. Williams is the executive director of Alice's Garden and founder of The Table. The table is described as a first century style community in the 21st century, bringing people together to share knowledge, health, and worship over nourishment. Hickey is the executive director at Girls Rock MKE, a music education and leadership development nonprofit serving girls and gender expansive youth and adults. And Bookman is the founder of the Ability Center, a nonprofit aimed at providing people with disabilities with the daily opportunity to be active, healthy, and to play. WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter, Taryn Powell, hosted a roundtable discussion with the three of them.
I spoke to each of you prior to this gathering and just picked your brain about what being honored with the Unity Award meant to you, the whys leading you in your work, and a little bit more. But it was interesting to me because each of you used different words to kind of describe mm-hmm. the feeling. From being gobsmacked to being humbled to also being grounded by it. So I'd just like for each of you to share in a few words how in your respective organizations, you know, how you see them promoting unity in Milwaukee. And let's keep this order, Venus, Mary Joy, and Damien. And also, I want you guys to feel free if someone says something that you, you know, want to follow up to, just go ahead and jump right in.
To be honored in this way is not expected, but so affirming, especially during a time when there are so many things going on in the world to divide us. To be able to say publicly and collectively, bringing people together, building platforms that encourage, nourish and strengthen a community is the most important work, some of the most important work we could be doing. I am just glad to be amongst a group who's being honored in this way at this time when we need to be building bridges and no more walls.
Absolutely. I speak a lot about with Girls Rock Milwaukee about the concept of bridging spaces and bonding spaces. And for us, where we serve youth and adults of marginalized gender identities, we strive to be a bonding space where we can be a creativity incubator, because I believe that music and creativity are really tap us into the interconnectivity of humanity. You get to really, in the practice of creativity, you get to dig into yourself. So kind of going inward and getting comfortable and confident in who you mm-hmm. are, and then able to express that out into the world in a way that I think is generative. And it allows other people to that same space, that same permission to do so. And so we create this bonding space so that marginalized gender identities can bravely experience that and develop that and support each other and lift that up. And then leaving our programs, the hope is that they bridge back out to the community with these new mindsets and skill sets that can look beyond a blame game and look beyond expectations for how people should be, but rather focus on honoring the dignity and creative inspiration and interconnected expression of humanity that we all have and should be empowered to embrace.
Incredible. I don't even know how to follow the two of you. Are you serious right now? Can I exit this interview?
You can go first. The next question.
No, please. That's okay. These intelligent minds are helping me. It's great. I love it. So, you know, Venus, I love the word you used of affirming. And I don't want to come from a combative space at all. And I'm sure we've all experienced this, but when I founded the Ability Center and focusing on helping people with disabilities play together with the people they love most, and essentially everybody having that opportunity to play together, we were just denied over mm-hmm. and over and over again. Like, we can't bring that equipment into our facilities because it's going to ruin our floors. You know, the spaces were inaccessible, inaffordable, or unavailable. And we were pushed out for so many years that, Venus, the reason I love that word affirming is this is all so new to me, right? To be awarded or be recognized for how much people with disabilities were denied from 2008 until about 2019, until our organization really started to take off. It was always combative. It was always fighting. It was always pushing for, always saying that these individuals deserve to be included. And now there's like this warmth of acceptance and come on in, and this is great. And so the word affirming really sticks with me, Venus, because for so long we were just continually tried to be kind of pushed down. And so I can only concur with that word, that this absolutely finally feels affirming to have people recognize the work that we're doing on behalf of all bodies in our community.
Yes.
Thank you guys for those answers. And Venus, I appreciate you kind of kicking off, talking about us being in a time where there are a lot of things that are dividing us. And I was going to ask that really, you know, considering the state of, you know, the nation, do you think the work that you all are doing, like, is it even more important now than it has ever been?
There's so much frustration and disappointment and even fear in these moments, coming out of and living into the first 100 days of an administration, when normally after an election, there might be some disappointment, but not as a whole nation to be just paralyzed. And that's the word that, you know, I really want to use. So for me, and for the work that I'm called to do collaboratively and collectively and not in isolation in these moments, this is a huge, huge moment of opportunity for anyone who is called to nourish, nurture, bring people together, and be about joy and healing. So I see this moment in the light of opportunity and reminding people of what naturally and intuitively lies inside of us. And I will always be of the mindset that we are people of hope. We are people of a purer, I could say that word, clearer vision and wanting what's best for everyone. And we just cannot be defeated in these moments. So thus, Unity Awards and anything that we can do to remind each other that number one, we are all in this together and we are going to continue to have each other's backs and advocate for our collective best interests.
Mm. The word paralysis is striking a really strong chord with me. When I think about the work of Girls Rock right now in this moment, I think that throughout time, creativity and music has always been important. It's always served a function, specifically in context of advocacy and resistance and of community building and of hope. And of coming together and recognizing that, like, what we're feeling in any given moment is shared by many others. It connects us to something larger than ourselves. So I think that music and creativity is important. It's served a problem solving. It's served an advocacy purpose over the years. But right now, I think in light of just the slew of executive orders that have come through that specifically impact the mission of our organization, the people that we serve in our organization. I have, I think in my reflection, have just recommitted to the importance of, again, creating these spaces where the community can come together and strengthen and uplift and support, and then go out together, knowing that we're not facing this alone, that we're not sitting at our house in our rooms, staring at our computer screen, doom scrolling and being paralyzed into not knowing what's going to come next. I think music can be a powerful vector for transforming some of these feelings of emotion, of writing a song about the paralysis, about these heavy feelings, and sharing it with others and realizing that you're touching on something that we all might be feeling right now. So I definitely and have recommitted to how can we create a space that can protect us together and prepare us for going back out into the community and bringing that spirit of creativity and problem solving to this moment. How can we inspire creative, confident youth and adults to go out there and know, you know what, I feel confident in myself and I feel confident in my values and what I believe. And let's get together and let's get some work done.
Yeah, all well said. You know, to me, this is a moment and a time to double down, right? We play, we play. I mean, that's what we do, right? We offer recreation and play in an inclusive space for all abilities, for all bodies. And right now, people need a place to release more than ever.
Yes, so absolutely.
To double down and find more spaces where we can bring people to just let off steam together, and again to play together is more important, you know, to me, obviously now, you know, even more than ever. And I think the beauty in our mission and the work we've done is that we've proven that people enjoy each other's companies, that people enjoy playing together, that, as we say, the different pair of shoes that we offer people, which is the adaptive sport wheelchair for us, everybody can strap on those shoes and play together in those kinds of shoes. And it opens a world of immediate inclusion and equitability, if that's even a word, that they can all sit down and we can all play and we can all have fun. And it's this great equalizer that almost no one who comes to our gyms even knows what they're doing. So everyone feels welcome, wanted, and comfortable in our spaces. And that's our goal. I will say this, what has been good in the years since the murder of George Floyd, to some degree for the disability community, is that disability until now in inclusion wasn't controversial. It is something that touches all races, all ethnicities, all sexes, all genders. I mean, it is a spectrum of humanity, religions across the board, that it's not a poor thing. It's not a wealthy thing. It's an everybody thing that we're all going to land in. And we really did a good job of helping people understand that and seeing that. Now to see, as we start knocking down DEI, that even disability is landing in that space. None of it should. But now this is the last one that the current administration seems to be coming after, is mind blowing. So for me, that idea of doubling down is saying we need to give places for people to escape. We need to give places for people to release, and we need to bring more spaces of joy to more abilities. And so now more than ever, it's not a time to live in fear, but to even double down on love.
That was WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter, Taryn Powell, speaking with Venus Williams, Mary Jo Hickey, and Damian Bookman. They are each being honored with Milwaukee Magazine's Unity Award. The Unity Awards event is happening tomorrow at Pilot Project Brewing. Did you know you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast? Just search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcast to download and listen to us on demand. Coming up later in the show, Milwaukee's own Buffalo Nichols joins us to talk about his take on blues and folk music.
I'm just really trying to promote an open-mindedness for our audiences, and some people expect certain things, and I think everybody would be a lot happier if we kind of just let artists express themselves and not live up to any expectations.
But first, we'll learn what sitting all day does to our bodies and how to prevent the negative effects. Keep listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Sedentary jobs have increased to about 80% of all jobs since 1950, according to the American Heart Association. If you're someone with a job that doesn't require much movement, chances are you're spending about 8 hours a day sitting. Add to that the average American is active for less than 20 minutes a day, and, well, let's just say the physical and mental health outcomes could be better. So, how can we make some small changes to counteract the negative effects that prolonged sitting has on our own minds and bodies? To learn more about the issue, I'm joined by UW-Milwaukee kinesiology professor Ann Schwartz. The phrase, sitting is the new smoking, has been out there for a bit, but first let's quantify the type of sitting that has the really negative effects. So, how long do you have to be sedentary for it to be considered prolonged sitting?
Right, yeah, and that's the key, is it's really prolonged sitting that we really want to look out for. Sitting in itself is not bad. You know, we sit to have dinner, we sit to socialize with our friends, we sit to read, and those are all great activities. But it's when we sit for too long that it becomes detrimental to our health. And so we're really looking at periods that are longer than an hour when we don't move. And, you know, commonly today we find ourselves sitting for 2, 3, 4 hours at a time, either working or, you know, watching some television shows or whatever it happens to be. But you really want to limit the sitting for more than an hour.
With most of us working sedentary jobs nowadays, most adults spend at least probably 8 hours a day sedentary. So let's get into some of the physical impacts of this.
Right. When we do sit for prolonged periods of time, it really does have an impact on both our physical and our mental health. High amounts of sitting increases our risk for dying from cardiovascular disease, from some cancers, and a host of medical problems. And it also increases our risk of developing things like type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, unhealthy cholesterol levels, certain cancers, and excess body fat. And then in terms of our mental health, it increases our risk for depression and diminishes our cognitive function. And so we really want to try and break up that sitting time and not spend most of our day sitting. And as you mentioned, most of us do spend about 8 hours sitting, and we need to get up and move our bodies.
Because I'm thinking ultimately not just our physical bodies, our muscles, but our brain is a muscle too. And if we're not utilizing them, they're not happy, right?
Right, exactly. We need to, when we move, we contract our muscles, we increase our blood flow, and that increases our blood flow to the brain and to all organs within our body. And so that movement is really vital to making sure that we're as healthy as we can be.
So all these bad effects of sitting for long periods of time, this phrase might cause some, you know, confusion for listeners, but the effects of sitting for long periods of time are separate from a person's physical activity. So can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. Well, we know that if people sit for too long, and when we're talking about too long, it's there seems to be about a 10-hour threshold. If you sit continuously for about 10 hours, then it doesn't matter how much physical activity you do, that may not counteract the negative effects of sitting. But, you know, for most people, even if we sit 8 hours a day, if we can get in about an hour of activity, and activity at a moderate to vigorous level. So what I mean by that is, you know, if you're exercising and you can carry on a conversation, but you sound breathless, you know, people can tell that you're a little bit out of breath, then you're probably working at a moderate level. So if you can do about an hour of that per day, then that'll counteract the long periods of sitting. However, doing an hour of activity is a lot to ask of people. And so an alternative strategy would be just to really work on breaking up that sitting time. And so, you know, maybe something like every half an hour, you know, stand up and go refill your coffee, or go to the bubbler and get a drink of water, or go talk to your colleague. And that's going to be a great way to counteract the effects of sitting.
One thing that has risen in popularity, especially over the past few years, is standing desks, especially at work. I have one, was able to get one, and initially was doing it all the time. Now, not so much. I need to remind myself to like keep moving or to stand for periods of time. Are standing desks the easy swap solution that we may initially think that they are?
That is a great question, because you're right. Standing desks are very popular. I have one too, but they're not our optimal way of breaking up sitting. They're great to change our posture throughout the day, but what we really want to be cognizant of is making sure that we're not stationary. So when we're sitting, we're stationary. And if you're standing, sometimes you find that you're stationary for long periods of time. And that can cause lower back issues. It can cause pain in your lower legs. And that's not a great situation either. So if you have your standing desk, continue to move it, but continue to break up that stationary time.
On the notes of like little things we can do, what are some other small manageable ways that we can improve our health to limit prolonged sitting?
Yeah, so it is really about breaking up that sitting time. And if you can do it every half an hour, great. Maybe you want to schedule it into the commercial breaks in the television show that you're watching, if you're watching a television network. But, you know, you can do little things like, you know, just get up and walk around, as I mentioned earlier. You can do some strengthening exercise. So, you know, just do stand up and sit down from your chair 10 times. And that's going to be a great strengthening exercise, as well as getting those muscles working and that blood flowing. You can do things like spreading out your housework throughout the day. I'll take breaks. If I'm working at home, I'll take breaks and I'll, you know, go to the basement and throw in the laundry or, you know, run the vacuum cleaner around a room. And that's a great way to break up the sitting time.
So with the past few years and the pandemic, I imagine that the prolonged sitting time has only increased because a lot of us weren't set up to work from home. We were working at dining room tables, fold-out chairs, even our beds or couches. And I think that lesser sense of activity is probably still with us a bit.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We've gotten used to sitting more. We've gotten into it's an easy habit to get into, and it's a difficult habit to get out of. And in addition to that, what we find is because we are working more from home still, we engage in less physical activity. We don't realize how much activity we get when we walk from our car to the office, or, you know, when we're in the office and we have to walk to a meeting or, you know, go talk to a colleague. Those all contribute pretty substantially to our daily physical activity. So not only are we sitting more, but we're less active, and that's not great for our physical and mental health.
Another thing I think about working from home in one place is it's hard to separate in your mind the sitting and being still in that way. And then on the other hand, also knowing you need to lay down and rest, right? You just some days just feel go from sitting to laying down and then you feel like you've done nothing. But is it the bad effects of keeping your body, you know, kind of perpendicular and at that angle that's worse for you versus we shouldn't even think about laying down as a part of this equation?
Well, sleep is a very different thing, and sleep is extraordinarily important. It's very restorative to all of our physiological and mental processes. And so making sure that we do get adequate sleep, and I'm not a sleep expert, but I do know how important sleep is to our physical and our mental health. And so not cutting down on your sleep or impeding your sleep is really important. But when we do sit all day and we aren't as active, then we tend not to sleep as well. We know that, you know, exercise can promote much better sleep. And so as hard as it can be sometimes to break up your sitting and to get outside and maybe take a walk or, you know, move around your house, it's not only going to be good directly for your health, but then it's going to indirectly help you through better sleep.
So again, we want to remind listeners, it may seem like a lot right now, but just start small, right? Just 2 minutes every 30 minutes, maybe an hour.
Right.
Get up, do something, vacuum, take a lap.
Right. And even if you can't do that, you know, just do something. That's the most important thing. Move your body in some way every day. And that's the most important message.
Well, Anne, I want to thank you so much for joining me to talk about this today.
It's been my pleasure.
Anne Schwartz is a professor in the Department of Kinesiology at UW-Milwaukee. We spoke in 2023. A new season of Bubbler Talk is on the way, and we need some new questions. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. We'll take one more break and then return with the latest episode of Live at Lake Effect featuring local blues musician Buffalo Nichols. That's next on Lake Effect on WUWM. This is Like Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Live at Lake Effect is our music series featuring artists performing in the Lake Effect Surf Shop in Shorewood. We brought the Lake Effects together, along with Visionary Studios, to showcase local and nationally touring musicians. Today we have Milwaukee's own singer, songwriter, and guitarist, Buffalo Nichols. He's played many different styles of music throughout his career, but today's Live at Lake Effect session highlights how he's taking traditional blues a step further. Here's Buffalo Nichols.
This song's called The Difference. It's about believing in yourself. When it came time to write your story, I was barely mentioned. Just a minor role, a place you'd go when you needed attention. But if I'm just a rest stop for your soul, I'll let it be. 'Cause I just don't know the difference between love and company. And the sun don't always shine on me, but I know that it's there, and it don't care if we live or die. Light is ours to share, and it's only you who's bleeding, but the pain is mine to bear. And I'm too weak to even speak or ask you to be fair. When it comes time to write my story, your own chapter. I'll tell the tale of how I fell and landed in disaster. And you can be the hero who comes to rescue me. 'Cause I just don't know the difference between love and sympathy. And the sun don't always shine on me, but I know that it's there, and it don't care if live or die, but the light is ours to share, and now both of us are bleeding, and the pain is mine to bear. And I'm too weak to even speak or ask you to be fair, and I never complained, but it didn't mean I wasn't of feeling pain. And I stayed in my place. I knew you were no good, but you'd be so hard to replace. Well, it must be time to end this story, for you have sprouted wings. I'll go back to my solitude. Go find better things. But if you should grow tired on the road that lies ahead, I hope you won't forget the one who kept your ego fed. And the sun don't always shine on me, but I know that it's there, and it don't care if we live or die, but the light is ours to share. Both of us are bleeding, but the pain is mine to bear. And we're both weak, but I at least am somewhat self-aware.
Hi, this is Audrey Nowakowski from Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. We're here at the Lake Effect Surf Shop in Shorewood for our music series, Live at Lake Effect. And today I'm happy to welcome singer, songwriter, and guitarist Buffalo Nichols. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thanks for the introduction.
What an amazing set you did. And you're here in Milwaukee and actually back home. You moved back from living in Texas and you were raised here. So yeah. To start, I'm curious about, what are some of your favorite core memories, or what is your Milwaukee?
Oh, Yeah, so much. I mean, a lot of my life was spent just discovering the city and, you know, public transportation and driving. And I guess that's not specific to, to Milwaukee. But, you know, I really started to discover the city through the music scene, you know, started playing in different like bars on the north side, and then eventually got to see River West for the first time through the bars and, you know, playing in the venues. And I remember going to Mad Planet when it was still all ages.
For sure. Yeah.
In my early days. So.
And you played a bunch of different music growing up. And before we get into that, I want to start off with what sparked your interest on guitar, because that's where it started, right? Not necessarily blues. It was just the instrument.
Yeah, that's right. My older sister had a guitar and I just kind of picked it up out of boredom and started learning the songs that I heard on the radio. And that kind of just opened my mind up to guitar music, which is a lot of music. So I've been just chasing that thing ever since.
So what kind of music shaped you when you were first learning how to play? Were you just doing it by ear?
Yeah, I was doing it by ear. A lot of it was stuff on the radio, I guess. So I was learning some new metal songs and stuff like that, or trying to. And it was like the mix CD era. So my sister would give me CDs and like I would be playing Taking Back Sunday songs and stuff like that.
Here's your curated playlist for you to practice. Uh-huh. And another thing that you learned really quickly early on was a portable sampler as well. We had an all acoustic set here today, but you do use this in your music and kind of change it up. What kind of role does it play for you? How do you enjoy the creativity it allows?
The thing that I've been dealing with lately is like these limitations of the guitar as an instrument, which is really more of a me thing than the instrument itself, but trying to just get outside of the world of vibrating metal and wood. So being able to make music with like the sounds that come from other places, like recording net found sounds and sampling other people's voices, just a totally different approach. And, you know, because the guitar can get frustrating because you're limited by your own technical ability. But with samplers, you can kind of just, whatever you hear, you can just turn it into music.
On the note of sampling and kind of changing it up, I have a feeling that you enjoy doing it not just for your personal creative benefit, but enjoy shaking it up for the listeners and changing the perspective of what people think the blues should sound like, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even the performance I've just done, I was on the way over here, I was thinking, what am I going to do? I even have my sampler in the car, and I just decided not to do it. And the live set that I do is totally different from what I've just done because it keeps it interesting for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really trying to promote like an open-mindedness for our audiences. And some people expect certain things. And I think everybody would be a lot happier if we kind of just let artists express themselves and not live up to any expectations.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And with pushing the limits of sound, you're using your instruments almost as a partner, like especially when I hear you on the steel and slides, like on some of your tracks on the album, it is your duet partner. So I'm curious with writing, does it come with you writing out lyrics first, or do you do a melody on the guitar and then things follow there?
Usually it starts with the instrument. Sometimes it'll be like one line that kind of inspires me to sit down and try to write a song. But usually I'm just playing a song and there's a melody and then you just start saying gibberish and, you know, the syllables match up and then there's a word and then you try to retroactively apply sense to it. You know, when you hear a song that means something, it's kind of disappointing to find out that it's really about nothing. But that's how it is sometimes. Songwriting is a mystery.
Yeah. Well, and part of your work in music is all about bringing the past into the future. Can you share a bit more about that and, you know, this mission that kind of shapes what you do?
Yeah. You know, I regret that I ever said that.
We could totally change it up. What would you your new mission statement to be right now?
Yeah, I got to come up with a new one. I didn't know that I would need one, you know, but apparently I do. But, you know, I kind of just got, like, people who know me from Milwaukee know that I did so many things, and Buffalo Nickels wasn't even a thing that anyone in Milwaukee knew about, but it just happened to be the thing that kind of worked in for me in the commercial music space. And I've been going along with it, but I kind of was just trying to, kind of like I was saying earlier, applying meaning to something that I was just kind of just, it was just like gibberish to me. Like I shouldn't say that, but I was playing blues because it was fun. And then people started to know me for it. So then I had to like explain why I'm doing it. And then because it's fun wasn't good enough. So I had to do all this stuff about bringing the past into the future. But that's really just like the way that I approach creativity is like, taking everything that I've learned and figuring out how to bring it forward.
Yeah. Well, I think it's totally acceptable to say you play blues because it's fun. We can keep it there record today. And with performing for audiences and as you said, following what intrigues you creatively, do you want to stay in this space or what are some projects or other genres that you're playing with that's not on stage right now?
Yeah, well, a lot of what I've been working on is kind of worked into my live show. And that's, I think, the people who come out to see me live get to see where I'm at creatively. And it changes constantly, probably too much for me to have a successful career. But I'm working on some things, and I'm going to make more of an effort to record and release that stuff. So this year, I think you'll see a lot more of that, more from the like experimental side and just, like I was saying before, using all types of sounds to express myself and not just the guitar.
You had spent some time living in Austin, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Moved there during the pandemic. Was that largely for your career? You mentioned the limitations of you need to stick to one thing to be successful in the music industry. How'd you find that experience and then what brought you back home?
Yeah, I left for a lot of reasons. I had gotten to a point where I kind of switched over to music full time. So then once the pandemic hit, I couldn't really do that anymore. So I had to make that difficult choice. And there were a lot of opportunities for me in Texas. So I went there and I really decided to come back because I missed being in the Midwest, you know, culturally. I didn't realize how comfortable it was for me here, just the way that people are and communicate. And I really wanted to challenge the idea of like industry towns and how important they are, because I don't like the fact that people have to leave where they're from and go to Nashville or Austin to build a career. So I wanted to come back and see what it's like to just work where you're from. And it's really difficult, and I was wrong, and those people are right. So you should move to LA or something.
Well, and you are an amazing example of what Milwaukee has to offer. So having recently moved back, as you mentioned, finding it really difficult to make a living with music here, what does Milwaukee need to do to try and foster and support artists like you? What do you want to see change so that you can have the life you want here and not have to move?
That's a great question that I don't even have the answer to. I think a lot of it is, I guess the problem is so deeply rooted that it's hard to just give a straight answer. There's things politically and culturally that don't foster art. It's a, you know, we talk about it as like a blue collar kind of working class place, and that's because you just have to work so hard to survive. So it makes art and music seem like a luxury. So if we could get art and music to be just appreciated more, that would be the first step, I think, is to see it as a valuable thing in itself and then try to apply monetary value to that and support artists. And I think people are doing their best, but there are some greater external forces that just make it kind of difficult. So it's tough to answer.
No, that's totally fair. And with the current style you're in right now with blues, it's, I think, a great genre because lyrics and songs can be on the outside very simple, mm-hmm. but they're expressing either complex stories or thoughts. And to execute that well, that simplicity well, mm-hmm. it's tougher than people think. So how does this format and writing for blues challenge you in a fun way? Like, what do you like about writing lyrics for songs that are seemingly simple on the outside?
Yeah, that's definitely something that I think about a lot. And I go back and forth because, like, the songs that I played today are kind of wordy songs, because I do feel this kind of stereotype of the blues being, like, incredibly simplistic. And it can be in the, like, on the surface, like you're saying, but then the complexity comes from the emotions of it. So then it's kind of easy to put a lot of things into a song if you use a lot of words, but to try to limit that is the real challenge. And it's really all about, like, kind of being connected to your emotions and being an effective communicator and trying to get a point across in as few words as possible. Like, I just did that.
Did so well, though. I mean, like, the song, like, The Difference, you know, you're repeating a lovely guitar melody, but it makes you take a moment, take a beat, and listen to the lyrics as they change, mm-hmm. like, almost like poetry. That song, for me personally, that sucked me in, and when you deliver a simple yet line that punches you in the gut, you notice it.
Yeah, that's something that I've picked up from touring a lot. Is trying to get people's attention. I mean, usually people just go for sheer volume, but I think if you can try to just draw people in with the words, and sometimes even like a softer volume can force people to just really try to pay attention.
Yeah. Well, you certainly held our attention and more today. So, Buffalo, thank you so much for bringing your music and yourself to Live at Lake Effect.
Thank you so much.
That was Buffalo Nichols joining us for Live at Lake Effect. His latest album, The Fatalist, is out now. Be sure to head to WUWM.com and our YouTube page to see him performing three original acoustic songs in the Lake Effect Surf Shop. Milwaukee musician Trapper Shep and myself are the executive producers of Live at Lake Effect. Sound engineering is done by WUWM's Jason Reavy. And thanks to our friends at Visionary Studios, a local advertising agency, for filming and editing this episode. WUWM's YouTube page has our past episodes of Live at Lake Effect, featuring the Wild Feathers, Blitz and Trapper, Joseph Huber, and many more. And Live at Lake Effect wraps up today's show. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you've missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, simply download the Lake Effect podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Are you thinking about getting into birding, but you don't know where to start? Well, tomorrow on Lake Effect, our series Chirp Chat is all about finding community with other birders. Plus, we'll head to the Winter Farmers Market to learn about the history of African-American culinary traditions. Thank you so much for joining us today, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.